Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Like, I can only have so much control in this life, and if I can say that I did my best, then that's success. Now, does it always look like how I want it to? No, but like, God's got a plan, and I have, like I said, very little control over what's going to happen in life, so I'm going to celebrate when it does go my way and learn when it doesn't.
And our guest this week is Sarah Fowler. She is the head women's basketball coach at Division III Eastern University. Also was one of the greatest players in St. Joseph's University women's basketball history. And Sarah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for that very nice intro. But thank you for having me.
So as we're recording this mid-September, I guess you are ramping up for the regular season. How are things looking for your squad?
Good. I wanted to get in the girls' ear early, so at Division III, you get 8 days that you can use outside of your season. So you can use those in the beginning of the season or postseason, but I'm using all 8 in the preseason. So our first day was actually second week of school, September 4th, I believe. So we're starting early, but, you know, it's once a week. And I'm really excited about our freshmen. We have a lot of hungry girls that are ready to just come in and shake things up. And I'm excited. I'm excited for just building and getting better, honestly.
How are you approaching this season with so much youth? Do you feel like you're looking at it a little differently in how you approach than maybe you have in past seasons?
Possibly, yeah. So we still have a good amount of seniors and upperclassmen who will know by now how I operate. I've had them for 3 years now. And I think it's going to come to keeping a pulse with the freshmen. It's already a long season, and the transition from high school to college is tough for a number of them. They're balancing school. Some of them are in our honors college. They're in various clubs. Some of them work jobs. So it's keeping a pulse on how they're doing. So it's going to be a lot of me and my staff checking in with them. You know, coaches are always fussy about their off days, right? But I want to be mindful of less is more and to get the best out of them, and to pay attention to holiday breaks and things like that, where a lot of our girls do need to fly home. So are they getting enough time at home and coming back refreshed? So I'm just really going to see how they're doing with them. You know, because you hit that wall. You hit that wall. A lot of freshmen hit the wall January, February, once you get into conference play, which is a hard time because that's conference play. Like, that's go time. So I just want to be wise in giving breaks and the length of breaks and those types of things, but not letting up on the standard and the challenge of college basketball.
Now, you had several stops as an assistant before you took over as the head coach in 2023. I think in May in 2023
yes.
is when you were hired at Eastern. You know, you're still relatively, I think, in the big scheme of things, third year, still relatively new as a head coach. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the vision of what you want the program to be has completely solidified, or do you think it is still a work in progress? And I don't mean wins and losses. I mean what you're looking for in a roster, what you're looking for in when you're recruiting that player, that's the type of player we want at Eastern.
It's still evolving for sure. I mean, I'm learning as I go on, and I never want to stop learning, but I do have a vision that we're getting closer to, and everyone told me it's going to take time, and I can surely be impatient at times, but I thought, you know, oh, 1 year, that's the time I need to wait, right? Not always. It's usually a few years in, and so no, it's still evolving, and I know we can win at Eastern. I know you said not including wins and losses, but I know we can win, and it's just going to take time. Some places it takes longer than others, but I've really, you know, we had a really rough season last year, but I actually think it made me more confident as a coach. As backwards as that sounds, I think I became a better coach because I had to navigate a lot of adversity and figure out how to get the best out of these girls when we're not winning as much as we would have thought, and just to keep the girls inspired, to keep everyone else inspired. So it's not, I know it's getting there, but it's not where I want it to be yet. So we'll see.
The actual coaching on the floor aside, third year as a head coach, do you feel like you have your arms around everything else that involves being a coach? I don't know how scheduling, I don't know how much of that's you and how much is, but scheduling, you know, travel, meals, so-and-so comes in, they've got a crisis at home, you've got to deal. Like everything that isn't the X and O's and stuff like that, now that you're kind of into your third year, do you feel like you're confident that you're able to handle whatever approaches on any front?
To an extent, yes. I definitely need some guidance on some things and seek some wise counsel. The cliche is go with your gut, and that's been pretty true. And if I can lay my head down at night knowing that I did the best that I could, then that has to be good enough. Not everybody's going to like it. But yes, to answer your question, I think coaching is so much not the X's and O's. So it's people management. It's helping young women believe in themselves. It's all those things that I think I am getting better at, but I sure do have a lot more to learn. But I do have more confidence going into year three.
Do you feel you've changed at all in the 3 years? And if so, how so? You're shaking your head.
Yes. Well, I'm a young mom. Well, I don't know if I'm young anymore, but a new mom, I should say. So I have two babies under two. Well, under three now. They're past two. So that has changed me tremendously. And God worked it out where I became a brand new head coach and a brand new mom all in the same year. And that was a lot to take on. But I have become more patient. I've become more understanding, more compassionate, but also more strong in my convictions. You know, I think there's a big difference between compassion and empathy. Empathy, I think, has you sway as to what the feelings are and what the emotions are. But, you know, I'm more confident in truth. I'm more confident in knowing right and wrong. And I see a lot of my players. I always saw them as, you know, young women that are human. But now it's like, okay, this might be my daughter someday. And I'm going to, quote unquote, mother them the best that I can when they're away from home. But it's not coddling them. It's helping them be an adult. So, yeah, I've changed a lot. I've had to be way less hard on myself. That's for sure. I can be a perfectionist at times, so I've had to die to that a little bit. And I've had to shift my mentality to pursuing excellence versus pursuing perfection. Big difference. And that's been huge in this process.
So growing up, was basketball number one for you, or were you doing a lot of different things?
Athletics was huge in our family, for sure. My brother and my dad set the tone for a lot of the basketball. But my sister and I, we grew up basketball, softball, karate, gymnastics, which was very short-lived, track and field. So yeah, athletics was a big part of not only my immediate family, but my extended family too. So really started to kind of flip that switch probably fifth, sixth grade of like, okay, I think I love basketball. And credit to my parents, they did an amazing job of challenging me and like pushing me to be, to commit to things, but never to the point of me resenting them or resenting the sport. Like, so tangent, but shout out to them.
Why basketball? Was it a case of you loved the sport or you were good, so you have success, it leads to love, you like becomes that circle? Or did you just love playing regardless of your talent level, where you were getting picked, where you were playing, stuff like that?
It sure helped that I was talented at it. And I think it was a perfect marriage of like, okay, I'm good at this and I enjoy it. So it just led me to great things, like by the grace of God. I don't know how I came to where I was, but it was probably both, I'll say. Yeah.
When do you start to realize you are good to the point where this is going to take me somewhere, or it's going to this, I can take basketball further than most? Like, was there an aha moment, or was it just kind of opportunity A led to opportunity B, and then all of a sudden I start getting letters and calls, and well, this is just how it's, I don't want to say like you took for granted this is how it works, but it just kind of was this, you know, your tide continued to rise for years until you end up on Hawk Hill.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think we were so new to it. My brother had been recruited a little bit for Division III, and my recruitment was a little bit different as far as the landscape and just really wanting to pursue some Division I opportunities. So my parents were very good about kind of asking around, getting a feel for things. You know, I don't think they had their mommy and daddy glasses on of like, my kid's the greatest thing ever. They, of course, are going to be Division I. They asked some mentors around, and I had some really good coaches. I really did. So they were realistic about me and realistic with my parents. And I reached a point, I remember writing it down. I like to write down my goals. And it was middle school, I think. And I knew it was attainable and something I wanted, but I wanted to play Division I basketball. It was like, I really want this to be something I pursue. So let's get at it. And it was, I laugh now since I'm recruiting young ladies. I hope I wasn't, you know, maybe I'll have to ask the staff at St. Joe's. I hope I wasn't a headache to recruit, but I had no idea what was going on, right? I had no idea where it would lead. But I knew I felt at home at St. Joe's. Love those guys to this day. And it was just a really great decision. It was a really great decision.
What other schools were in the running?
I was looking at, oh goodness, taking me back. I really love St. Francis, who's now Division III, St. Francis, Pennsylvania. And I really loved University of Delaware, and I loved American and St. Joe's. Those were the guys.
What pushed you to St. Joe's? Like, what was there one thing that was the point that you said, okay, this is going to be it?
Distance from home. I have some family in the Philadelphia greater area, I'll say. And I felt at home with them. You know, I think, and I try and replicate this in my program of it being a family atmosphere. I remember going on some visits and kids were running around of the coaches, and a lot of coaches will talk family atmosphere, but they live it. And that's kind of how I want to be. So I love the family aspect, and it was a winning program too. That was, I knew the tradition and the strength of the program. And I mean, they really showed that they wanted me. I mean, I still remember to this day, I was throwing at Penn relays for track and field in high school. And there's Coach Griffin and Coach Steph at the time coming to watch me throw for a sport they're not recruiting me for. So that spoke volumes of like, oh, wow, these guys really, really want me. So yeah, they just kind of hit it out of the park in a number of different ways and just felt like home.
So you went to Elizabeth area high school, right?
Yeah, Elizabethtown. Yep.
Elizabethtown, yeah. So we're talking Lancaster-ish.
Yes.
Just to give people context of distance. So you come in to St. Joe's. What is the transition like from a basketball standpoint? Did you feel like you took a giant step forward? And from just a life standpoint, how was the transition to becoming a college student slash athlete?
Tough, tough. I mean, we were there 6 weeks in the summer before my freshman year. Couldn't walk the first week because I was so sore, which is hilarious now because my athletic director at Eastern is Brian Bingaman, who was my strength and conditioning coach at St. Joe's. So that's so cool to see that kind of come back up. But yeah, he made us so sore that I couldn't walk the first week. So that was tough physically. And I remember we were supposed to do a track workout one morning. I think it was a Thursday or a Friday morning. And we wake up, it's raining. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, workouts are probably canceled. It's raining. We can't go on the track. And one of our juniors came and picked us up, and I told her, like, oh, why, you know, I thought things were going to be canceled. It's raining. And she just laughed at me. She said, things don't get canceled, Sarah. They don't. So that was kind of that was a funny memory I have. And I think just right, adjusting for a small town, smallish town, and going to, you know, we kind of straddle the city and the suburbs, obviously, just coming into a bigger city and a bigger setting where not everyone's like you. And it was a hard year, you know, and I didn't play a lot my freshman year. I was going up against Chatilov and Grinsven, who had a brief stint in the WNBA, beat me up every day. And it was just hard. It was hard to get beat up and not feel like I was being rewarded for it with my playing time. But hindsight's 20/20, right? I got almost 10 minutes a game as a freshman. That was my average, which is I needed to be far more grateful for that than I was. But no, it was just hard, and hard is good for all of us. Most likely, God's going to teach us something through the hard. So yeah, it was quite an adjustment, but a good one.
Do you remember the first time in college where you felt like you broke through and you had an impact? Be it a game where, you know, things maybe finally started to slow down for you, or in a practice where you talk about getting beat up every day, where you finally counterpunched, and I don't mean that literally, mm-hmm. but you did something that just where you felt like you arrived, or a moment where you're like, I'm going to be able to do this. Was there one, or does not one thing bubble to the surface?
Yes. I think the summer before my sophomore year, we did the summer session. I really kind of came into my own then. I got better, got stronger. And yeah, those days of getting beat up by the person ahead of me were really good for me. I mean, I got better on defense. I got better on offense. So once she graduated, I was able to kind of step in to my own a little bit more. And once we started games, it kind of solidified like, okay, I can step into a bigger role this year. And that's what my coaches had been telling me all along. I think it just finally became real sophomore year.
Cindy Griffin, your head coach, you referenced mm-hmm. watching you at the Penn Relays, legend, alum of this podcast. What was it like playing for her? Why is she good as a coach?
That's a great question. She's tough, but a good person. She's just a great lady. Like, I've seen both sides of her, right? I played for her, and then I got to work for her. And of course, there's always she's your head coach, right? You can't stand her some days. And that's because she's demanding the best out of you. She demanded the best out of all of us. And it was what I needed. You know, a lot of times I didn't want to hear what the coaches were telling me, but they knew best. They knew what I needed. If I had gotten what I thought I needed, I wouldn't have grown. You know, I think we think we know what we need, but they knew way better, being on the coaching side, what I needed. So they were great. And she was great. And she just has a healthy program. It's just healthy. I'm always sad to hear how many programs are just unhealthy or toxic. And I think we overuse the word toxic sometimes. But she's just looking out for her staff, looking out for her players. But she does put her family and her faith first. And that's really, really important. So why is she so great? I think she's just consistent. She's tough as nails. And she is also, you know, she still keeps her way. She still keeps her way, but she's open-minded to other things. So that's short answer. But just really, she does care about people. Wow, she came to my wedding. I mean, it's just things outside of basketball. It really is that cliche family atmosphere, but it's true. They live it. She lives it.
I remember watching you play and looking at the final numbers for your career. 1,000 points, more than 600 rebounds, over 100 blocks. I think you led the team in assists your senior year. Like, you did everything. Did you consider yourself a versatile player? Was it something you strive to do? Or did it just, this is how I play basketball, and the numbers are what the numbers are? But, like, did you look at yourself as someone that could check every box, or did you not think of it that way? You're just playing my game, doing what the coaches asked, and this is how it works.
Kind of the latter, yeah. I was just doing what my coaches asked, and we had a pretty good idea of what our roles were. I think I just listened to what the coaches were saying. That sounds like a so simple of an answer, but I tried to listen to what they were saying, and I had more confidence as each year went on. And unfortunately, we didn't have the records that we wanted my junior and senior year. But I felt that I was doing all that I could, and just working my butt off. Working my butt off was the biggest thing. And whatever happened because of that was great, and really grateful for it.
Like, I'm looking at it here. You're one of two people in St. Joe's history to have 1,000 points, 600 rebounds, and 100 blocks. Like, does that surprise you that of all the players in St. Joseph's history, there are two that did what you did?
It's kind of crazy to think about because I was by no means one of the, I mean, we played with Natasha Cloud. Like, she was on our team. Like, she's in the WNBA right now playing in a playoff, like the playoffs. So I think those stats are really cool. And the other one is Steph McCaffrey. And she was my coach. So, you know, there were so many days where we just, she just got on me. So I'm really grateful that she did. And that is a lot because of her. But I guess, yeah, I'm really happy about those statistics and all of that. But I was by no means, I don't know, one of the best players ever to come out. You know, like, I was being coached by Susan Morin, who's now Susan Lavin. She's hanging up in the Hagen. I mean, it's those are really cool stats, and I'm proud of them. But I think it's funny, every staff that I've had at Eastern, we, like, go and look back at our film, and just watching me play, I'm like, oh, our shorts are so long, and oh, I thought I was so good, but look how slow I, you know, it's just funny seeing on the coaching side of, it's kind of humbling to watch your old film. But no, I'm really grateful. I was blessed with not a lot of injuries in college. Like, that didn't hinder me. So yeah, those are awesome stats. And I had a great experience at St. Joe's. But I think I knew I wasn't the greatest thing ever. And I've really realized that more as I've gotten older. Tried to stay humble. Tried.
Susan Lavin, also an alum of this podcast.
Nice.
Just another plug. So when you think back, are there any games, moments, from a basketball standpoint, that really jump out when you think of your playing career at St. Joe's? Or are most of your memories the locker room, bus rides, moments with your teammates, stuff like that?
Both. There's definitely a few. I mean, I alluded to my junior and senior year, we were like about a 500 team. So those stunk. Those years stunk just because we knew we could have been better than that. So there's a few games that stick out. Syracuse, I think it was my freshman or sophomore year, Syracuse came to Hagen and blew us out by almost 40. That was embarrassing. St. Louis got us a few times. Those were frustrating. But probably the most frustrating one was my senior year. We were in the A-10 playoffs in Richmond. And Rhode Island beat us, who we had pretty much taken care of in the regular season. And they got us. Our playoff run was done, like, unexpectedly. And that one hurt. That one hurt a lot because that was it. That was it to my playing career in college.
Now, you did play in the NCAA tournament, though, as a sophomore?
Freshman and sophomore.
Freshman and sophomore.
Yep.
And sophomore, I think you were the leading scorer in the second round against UConn?
I guess.
What was it like just to be on the court with UConn in the NCAA tournament? Because you guys pull off the huge win. I think it was Georgia.
Yes.
In the first round.
Yeah.
And then your prize for that is you get matched up with UConn. Like, what? Just from a purely kind of almost like human standpoint, to go up against, you know, the premier program in college basketball.
It was really awesome. And again, I think I was so new to a lot of this. I knew we were in it. I knew it was exciting. But looking back, I'm like, man, I don't think I knew how cool that was at the time. But I did know it was cool. But now looking back, I'm like, that was really cool. So we knew Breanna Stewart would be huge. We knew Steph Dolson would be huge. And I mean, like, height, strength, all that. But I think most shocking for us was there was a – I don't know if she still plays in the league anymore, but Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis was about as tall as me as a guard. So just, like, we knew some of those big names. They were all big names, but we knew some of their posts were going to be huge, but – when you have a girl on the wing draining threes as tall as me and stronger than me, it was just kind of like, wow, okay. But no, it was a fun game. We gave our all, and I think we were proud of the fact that we scored a decent amount of points against them. It was 60-something against UConn, you know, who does have a very good defensive game plan too. So no, we kind of just played hard and didn't expect too much of ourselves and enjoyed the moment. But we were proud of how we did overall.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Sarah Fowler in just a moment. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V and see dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Eastern University head women's basketball coach Sarah Fowler. Now, after you went to Greece?
Ireland and then Greece.
Ireland, yeah. And then Greece.
Yep.
Did you always figure, like, were you looking as your senior year's winding down? I don't mean you're not focusing on what's happening, but were you always planning to pursue, or was it an opportunity? You start hearing about an opportunity and you think, okay, well, that will be cool. Like, what would, you know, as your college career is ending, what's your mindset as far as the next step for basketball?
Yes, I knew I wanted to keep playing, and there was an opportunity to do so if I got into the program, but Sport Changes Life program. When I was a freshman, one of our seniors, Shelby Smith, went into the program. And so I knew of it from her. And obviously, Susan has so many ties to Ireland, being from there. So she knew everybody in the program leading it. So she was huge in kind of getting me a leg up in the application process. And yeah, I got in and it was awesome. I had a great experience in Ireland. I was there exactly one year and got my master's, was able to coach, and was able to keep playing. It was awesome.
And how was the experience in Greece?
It was good. I think very different than Ireland. So Ireland, I was busy. School, basketball, coaching, traveling. I tried to get as much travel in, too. But Greece, it was just practice. It was just practice. And I was really fortunate to play with Ciara Andrews, Cece Andrews, better known as, who was a college teammate of mine at St. Joe's. We were able to go and play overseas together. Like, that doesn't happen a lot where you get to play overseas with a college teammate. So that was awesome, like being together with her. And yeah, it was awesome. But I think my heart was kind of done. I knew I wanted to try it, but I think I was kind of, my heart wasn't in it. You know, I did really well in practice, but it wasn't translating to games. Like, I stunk it up in games. And I think it's just because I think I was done. And they were so, I look back and part of me is like, oh, I should have just stuck it out. But I was pretty ready to be done. And they were so gracious about, you know.
I think when you know, you know.
Yeah. And they were really just the Greek league. And everybody with Volos was the club's name. They were so gracious to let me go home and didn't give me a hard time. And so that was a great decision because then I got to see my sister play in her senior year of college basketball. That was really cool to be able to watch her. And so I think it was a great, it was only half a season, so it was short-lived with my time in Greece, but Cece's one of my best friends to this day, so we got to bond while we were over there. I got to see a beautiful country and wonderful people, and yeah, it's just, my heart wasn't in it. So yeah, looking back, it's like, man, I should have just stuck it out, but I was pretty, yeah, hindsight is 20/20. This is a big theme of what I'm talking about.
Before we talk about the transition to becoming a coach, just as an aside, I didn't know this until I started digging into your career. Oh, by the way, you're done basketball at St. Joe's. You walked onto the track and field team.
Yeah.
And you set two program records. Like, that's absurd. I know you mentioned early in the conversation that track and field was in your resume growing up to a point, but that is a lot different than, oh, let me do this before I graduate and I will set records ahead of people that have done this their entire life. Like, that's baller. Like, you gotta admit that.
It was cool. It was really cool.
But it was a shot and discus, by the way.
Yes, correct. But they haven't, those records, they hadn't had any throwers for a very long time at St. Joe's track. So I had a lot of years of not having to compete against. But yeah, that was awesome. I'm really glad I got to do that because I loved throwing in high school and it was always such a great debrief after basketball. It's so different, right? Like, basketball is a team sport. It's very mental at times, but track is, it's all you. It's your fault. It's your success. Very mental. So I loved that kind of change of pace, and I was really glad I got to do it in college, which was really cool. And yes, set the records, but there hadn't been a very competitive throw in a very long time there. So I felt like I wasn't going up against a ton of great numbers, but yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
So you mentioned coaching in Ireland when you're as part of your everything you're doing there. Did you always figure basketball coaching was your future, or did you think it would be something that you do on the side and, you know, maybe eventually you have kids and you coach their team? What is the on-ramp to, I'm going to be a coach and that's going to be my life?
Yeah, I did not know I wanted to be a coach. I wanted to actually pursue a career in medicine. I wanted to be a physician assistant. So when I got back from overseas, I started pursuing that with, it was a medical office job, a medical scribe job, to try and get some of those clinical hours to put towards my PA applications. But a few months in, I just missed athletics, college athletics. There's nothing like it. And I just kind of got the coaching itch. And I kind of voiced that to my St. Joe's crew. And my very first coaching opportunity came up at Colgate University. And I tried it. And it was good to learn so much. And I met my husband up there. That was great, too, in the middle of nowhere, upstate New York. But, yeah, I just kind of just kept taking a step. And, you know, I did the director of ops role for a while. Almost 4 years, three, 4 years, something like that. So it was all the logistical things and the organizational things that go behind a program. And then it was, okay, I'd love to have a voice now. I'd love to be able to coach girls now because you're very limited in what you can do at the ops role as far as on-court coaching. I think that's a little bit different now. But yeah, so I took another step and became an assistant. And eventually the Eastern job kind of came up and it was a very, oh, sure, I'll look into it, but I don't know. I don't think I'm ready for that. And here I am. So I was not thinking coaching.
For people who aren't familiar, director of ops.
Yes.
That is, you're making the trains run on time. You're making sure food's getting delivered at the hotel, all that, the grunt work, the grind that no one realizes, that probably most of the kids think, well, this is just how it happens.
Yes.
Like, you know, I am curious. I can think of very few other positions, Division One director of ops, that translate Division Three head coach, the skill set you develop in that when you're taking over at Division Three, where you don't have the resources, where you don't have the personnel. Huge help when you started at Eastern, just understanding what goes into all these different things.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right because you wear many hats at Division Three. We're pretty well resourced at Eastern, I do have to say, so I'm grateful for that. But yes, I think I'm just kind of wired to be organized and have a lot of strengths in the logistical areas. But oh yeah, it taught you so much appreciation for what goes on behind the scenes, and you're not supposed to know it as a player, right? You don't want the players worrying about food and travel logistics and things like that, but yeah, it was very humbling to step into that role and do all the dirty work. And yeah, food was a big part of it. Food was a big part. Making sure the food's on time is big.
The looks I've seen on ops people's faces over the years when a delivery's late or they get a call on the bus that we don't have enough for X, Y. Let me just say, people don't appreciate that job enough because there's no off switch.
That's correct. That is correct.
So like in the early years, you know, when you're doing the ops and then when you become an official assistant where it is more basketball related, like, were you sure this is what you wanted to do? Like, there's making the decision to pursue and then there's actually doing it. Did you ever waver at any point? Like, I don't know. Or were you confident that this was for you?
I just kept taking a step at a time, I think. I mean, when I was in my assistant role before Eastern, I was at Robert Morris as an assistant. And expecting my first child. So it's very interesting how, so once we found out we were pregnant, some of the conversations my husband and I had were me being a stay-at-home parent and him going and working a job that could support us. And Eastern comes along and totally flips the script. I'm, oh, head coach, new mom. Oh, okay. Sure, let's find out some things about this. But it was more of just, sure, let's take a step and see what happens. Let's take a step, see what happens. But yeah, I did not know. I don't even think I thought of being a head coach. Like, I was pretty content. I like being an assistant. I like taking direction from the boss and doing a good job, being reliable. So no, I really hadn't. I mean, my first thought when the Eastern job came up was, oh, I'm not ready for that. I need some more time as an assistant. Like, no way. And here I am. So,
how many years were you on staff at St. Joe's?
About three.
So what is it like coming back to your alma mater? Like, obviously the dynamic is different from player to becoming a coach. Was it weird at all? Was there, and when you start and now you're a peer to Cindy and you're, you know, was there any of that, like seeing your teachers during the summer where you're looking at them completely differently and you're like, or was it just, this is, I mean, maybe it was easier because you had the experience at Colgate and it wasn't like just this, what you went to bed as a player and you woke up the next day as a grad assistant. Like, you had that buffer. But still, was there any transition to the relationship?
Not a whole lot. I mean, she's so professional and so great. It was kind of like coming home, but I knew I needed to do a good job. And yeah, I don't think I would have done as decent of a job if I had not had the year at Colgate to learn the ropes. I think I really would have struggled just being thrown into it immediately from player to coach. So yeah, it was great just to see the other side and like her even more, I think. Yeah, really grow to like her even more, seeing that side of her. And even more so now, as I'm a boss and I'm a head coach. So,
is there a moment during your coaching career where you found yourself saying something?
Oh my gosh. That I know what you're going to say.
You had been told over the, and you're like, all right, now I get it.
Yes. Yeah, the funny one my girls could tell you about. I don't know what year it was, but Coach Griffin said, your womanhood will be tested this game. And I said something along the lines of that this past year to my girls. I was like, oh, dear. Oh, dear. And that's not the only one, too. But there's a lot of truth behind what she's saying. So it comes out.
What is the biggest thing you think you've learned that you learned from Cindy Griffin that has helped you as a head coach at Eastern?
Be consistent. Be professional. And just, I'm saying a lot of things. Work hard, but balance your family, too. Those are the big ones, and I have taken those with me for sure, because not everybody works hard in coaching. Not everybody works hard, and sometimes that's what I thought, but now being on the other side of it, and that's any industry, right? Like, not everyone's a hard worker, but I'm going to make sure I am. I want my staff. I want my players to know that I'm there for them and that I'm going to work hard, but like my family and my faith, they come first for sure.
Building off of that, so you are pregnant when you get the Eastern job, mm-hmm. or had you just given birth?
I think I was 7 months pregnant at my interview, my on-campus interview. Yeah.
So, I mean, the timing is like, you know, almost simultaneously in the...
Almost. Yeah, I got the job in May and had my daughter in July.
Do you think, and if I'm completely off the path there, tell me, but bringing a human into the world... The same time you're getting your first head coaching job, head coaching can be overwhelming, but having that responsibility in your life, did it help you keep in perspective the things that, as a head coach, that in a vacuum might drive you nuts? But given what you're dealing with, you're like, okay, we'll figure that out. Like, it's not that big a deal. Like, am I making sense here?
Yes.
Like that, because you talked earlier about how it changed mm-hmm. you, but do you look at things that maybe the first few months as you were settling in, you might have just gone crazy trying to figure out, and you were just able to, in time, we'll worry about that. Like, any mm-hmm. of that?
Maybe a little bit. I've always kept a pretty good balance in life of not letting work or, I don't know. I think I've kept a really good work-life balance my whole career. But I think my daughter helped, you know, something could go crazy at work, right? Something that's just hard to deal with. Then you get home and see your baby. It's like, oh, that wasn't that big of a deal, you know? So it is definitely a good perspective reminder to see her little face every day and know that, yeah, it's not as bad as maybe you think it is.
When you start head coaching at Eastern, how long did it take you to get used to the things that only a head coach does? And what I mean by that is talk to the refs, you know, your approach on the sideline. You know, kind of setting the tone. Like, did that come natural to you? Do you maybe not even think about it? Or was it something that you had to approach that now all eyes are on me? Everybody's going to take their cues from how I react to things and stuff like that. Like, was that something you had to, I don't even know if learn, but kind of sculpt and kind of work on early in your career?
Yes. I think I've always been pretty presentable, approachable, pretty good with people. So, and if anything about the ops role, the Dobo is the nickname for the director of ops role, director of basketball operations. If anything that taught me, it's to stay calm, right? You could be freaking out on the inside, but you can't let that show to the girls, to the coaches. You can't. So I think I had a lot of practice with that of like, even when I'm really struggling with something or feeling insecure about something, like, you can't let it show. You got to fake it till you make it sometimes. And I think I like to think I do that well. We'll see. But yeah, fake it till you make it. And you know, you bring up refs and I have confidence that I can talk to almost anybody and keep it professional. And gosh, refs are human too. My goodness. And how am I going to get the best calls going my way if I'm screaming at them? You know, and it's also not really my personality. I can get pretty fiery. My girls and my staff know that. I haven't seen it yet, some of these freshmen, but I can get pretty fiery. But it's just setting a calm tone and a lot of the leaders that I admire and respect, like, I try and embody that too. Just being a stable leader, I think, is what I try to be.
At this point in your career, do you prefer practice or games as a coach?
I think practice, that's such a coaching thing to say, right? But I do. I love the time with the girls and getting better and seeing growth. But the games really can show the growth too. So I love being in that setting and celebrating when somebody finally makes this pass that you've been showing to them on film and seeing them come into their own, hit a few shots, get hot. Like, that's exciting to see in game. But I do love practice.
Kind of to that point, how tough was it to learn the limits of your powers as a coach? And what I mean by that is you can show the kids film. You can drill it. You can tell them what's coming. Mm-hmm. They have to do it. Mm-hmm. Was it difficult for you to accept that you have to cede that control, especially all those years as a player where you're the one doing mm-hmm. it? You're the one mm-hmm. with the basketball in your hand. Like, tough or not really?
It is tough. It is tough because I like to think of myself as a hard worker. I can work as hard as I want, but that's not always going to get the best out of one of my sophomores or one of my juniors. So it's really challenged me to find out what makes my girls tick and how to communicate with them, all while keeping my standard as head coach. So yes, it's been, I don't mean this in a arrogant way, but a lot of things in my life that I've tried, I've been pretty good at, and I've worked hard at them. So growing into adulthood, just because I work hard at something doesn't mean I'm going to get the result that I want. That's life. That's life, Sarah. So that's been a huge lesson for me. So let's make the most out of what we got. Let's make the most out of who we have on our roster right now. And yes, I'm going to keep working hard, but I can't have in my mind that, okay, hard work plus this equals success. And I've also had to really reflect on what does success mean, too. That's been huge, especially last year. Success, now I can say with, I think I always knew the right answer. Trying my best and working hard while doing it. I always had the right answer, or what I thought was the right answer. But now I've had to really come to believe that. Like, okay, like, I can only have so much control in this life. And if I can say that I did my best, then that's success. That's success. Now, does it always look like how I want it to? No, but like, God's got a plan. And I have, like I said, very little control over what's going to happen in life. So I'm going to celebrate when it does go my way and learn when it doesn't.
Kind of along those same lines, you talk about how you worked hard at things, but you also things kind of, you know, you were good at. How have you gotten from a patient standpoint in understanding that? Because I think a lot of times good players, when they become coaches, just make the pass to the corner. Mm-hmm. Just do it. And it's not that the kid doesn't want, they just, it doesn't click for them like it reflexively clicks for you. Is that something you've had to, as an assistant and as a head coach, like, just because it came easy to me or I was able to process it quickly doesn't mean everybody else can? Was that something you had, a lesson you had to learn from a coaching standpoint?
Absolutely. It's a great point because that's what I found finally getting to be an assistant, getting to be a head coach. What I wanted to say is, well, you just do it. You just do it. That's like, it's instinctual, right? For a lot of players. But I know for a fact, just because you're a good player does not mean you're a good coach. So that's not good enough to say like, well, you just do it. So what it's forced me to do is verbalize, be specific, flesh things out, explain the why, break film down. Like, I need to be better in those areas if I want the best out of my girls to help them learn. Because then I'm just getting frustrated if I'm expecting this of them and they don't know, they're not speaking my language or need it explained a different way. So great point. I mean, yeah, it's really a lot of times I want to say just do it. And there are times for that. Some of my girls get carried away with the what ifs and, well, what if this happens? And they get stuck in the gray area sometimes where sometimes it does demand just play basketball. Just do it. But there are plenty of teachable moments that I need to, you know, they stump me sometimes of like, okay, yeah, I need to figure out a good way to explain this or to show them. So that's definitely been a challenging coaching.
Which element resonates more with you? Love to win or hate to lose?
Hate to lose. Yeah, that's, I think a lot of us coaches have that problem of, you know, even if we win, we'll find out like what we need. And we should. We should still see what we need to get better at. But last year, we didn't win a lot. So I was, after the wins that we did have or like the little wins, we focused on celebrating the little wins. Did we get better at this? Did we outshoot people? Did we out-rebound people? Things like that. But I think I've been learning. It's just, I think it is some of the perfectionist mentality of there's always something we could just, that just wasn't perfect, blah, blah, blah. But gosh, Sarah, like celebrate the joys and the wins, because it's hard to win. It's hard to win at college basketball, whatever level. It's hard to win. It's hard to win. You can have all the talent in the world, but a crappy culture. You could have not so great of girls and talent wise and a great culture, and those teams win. So it's just, it's, I can be a very black and white person sometimes, and my goodness, the world is not black and white. It's not. Some things are, but most of the world is gray.
Final question. Someone comes, watches your program, plays against your program, touches Eastern women's basketball in some way. Like, what is the number one thing you want them to walk away from the experience of interacting in some way with your program?
I would say heart. That's one of our pillars, our program pillars. So Eastern's kind of pillars are faith, reason, and justice. And we kind of paralleled that in our program this year. And I implemented R3, going to be selflessness, sisterhood, and heart. So heart is a good one. That's not like a sappy heart, like, oh, let's, you know, yeah, it's important to be kind. But like, do we play with heart? Did we give our best? Since I've been learning that success is giving your best, like, have we done that? Have we given our all, no matter up 20, down 20? So I hope heart.
Sarah Fowler, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And that will do it for this episode of One on One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Eastern University head women's basketball coach Sarah Fowler for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One on One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.